A legal education means you will learn to speak in a new language. You will be taught to achieve insight into the world around you and to sharply question what you know.
You can't handle the truth!
What are you doing, detective? What are you doing talking to my client without me present? You sneaky Pete.
Lose! I don't lose! I win! I win! I'm a lawyer! That's my job! That's what I do!
Okay, comedians and law fans, this is Alex Barnett, and I'm joined in the booth with Matt Ritter.
Hello, everyone.
And we're really excited because we're going to be revamping the format of the podcast, starting with this podcast. So Matt and I are really excited to take the helm for this one. Right, Matt?
Yeah, it's kind of like, who had a big upgrade that worked? Facebook? Did they have a big one, the reformat that worked for them? Are we like Facebook?
I think so. Although hopefully we'll work more like the Twitter IPOs than the Facebook IPOs.
No, you know what? We're like LinkedIn.
That's right.
It was terrible for like 10 years, and then all of a sudden everybody uses LinkedIn.
That's right. We're Comedians at Law 2.0, and we're really excited. We've got a couple of really big announcements. First of all, we want to welcome a bunch of new people to the group. We've got some LA people who Matt's going to be working with.
Yeah, John V. Goldstein and Adam Bloom. They've got their web series, Lawyers, the web series, which we're going to promote this week on our site. So you'll check that out.
Right. And then on the East Coast, we have Ndidi Origi, who is Nigerian by birth or by family extraction, and she is going to be working with us on the East Coast, so we're really excited to have her joining us.
Yeah, I'm excited. Her and I go way back. We did improv together in 2005.
That's right. That's right. And the other big piece of news we have is our upcoming show on November 23rd at 8 p.m. at the White Plains Performing Arts Center. So people should be looking out for that. There's still tickets available, and if people want to go buy some, which we encourage them to do, they should go on the White Plains Performing Arts Center website, or just email us at info@comediansatlaw.com.
Yeah, and it holds 400 people, so we really want it to be full, because I think we're gonna record it. We're gonna record our sets. I don't know. Maybe it's time for us to put out an album.
I think so. Comedians at Law live. Although it'd be great if we were at the Hollywood Bowl, but the White Plains Performing Arts Center is going to be a very suitable venue for us.
Why? You don't think that has a cachet? The WAPAC?
That's right. The WAPAC. The Cal at WAPAC.
Comedians Law live at the WAPAC.
That's right. Well, anyway, without further ado, let's jump right into this episode, which I think people are going to really enjoy. And let's start with the news.
But since when has the paragon of investigative journalism allowed lawyers to determine the news content?
Okay, Matt, this week we have some really great news stories. The first is the ongoing saga coming out of Miami with the Miami Dolphins.
I love this. I love this one.
I know you've been keeping tabs on this one. This one is crazy because it's about bullying and it's about giant guys getting bullied, which is, sort of ironic. But the latest thing is that apparently some guys on the team threatened to have apparently sort of rough sex with Jonathan Martin, the guy who's been the victim. In particular, the quote was, quote, "We are going to run train on your sister. She loves me. I am going to F her without a condom and C in her C." And this is a quote.
Yeah, I love how, people who are real scummy always add in that part about the no condom. That's, the real – you're a real lowlife when you have to feel like you've already talked some really horrible stuff. All that other stuff in isolation would be completely egregious. The no condom thing just basically is a way of saying, and by the way, I'm the lowest piece of dirt on this planet.
It sure is. But now – but I want to get your take on a couple things. First of all, with respect to the whole bullying incident, what are the legal ramifications of all this? I mean, is there any legal recourse for this guy?
I mean, I would think so. I would think actually, you know, look, how is this any different from a hostile work environment that is not amongst, you know, giant, you know, people who thrash each other for a living? I mean, this is not on the field, you know? I mean, this is in the office, you know, this is their office place, essentially. You know, he's being basically put in a hostile work environment.
That's right. But you actually raise a good point, which is it possible to bully somebody who weighs more than 300 pounds and who beats people up for a living every Sunday?
Well, I find it fascinating because I always thought of everybody who ended up in the NFL as a bully. I sort of had this, and you know, maybe it's a bit of a stereotype, but I sort of had this, you know, image of everybody, because you always hear about this stuff. They haze each other, and you know, it's just kind of a roughhouse mentality. But I think, and that in that sense, you know, Jonathan Martin is, you know, he's an Ivy League educated guy who happens to play football.
Right. I mean, by all accounts, he's a very smart guy, very sensitive guy. So obviously, you know, it's like the eggshell plaintiff, right? You take your plaintiff, you take the sensitivities of the person as they come. But it does raise the issue of, like, can someone that big and that aggressive be bullied? And apparently the answer is yes. The other question I have is what is the required legal action that the NFL or the team must take with this guy Incognito, who apparently was the bullying victimizer? Or the bully himself.
I mean, is there anti-bullying courses that he needs to take? You know, like a sexual harassment training seminar. Do all the players need to now? You know, to, you know, like, figure out a way to have a class where they, you know, like bullying tactics. You know.
Right. Well, and then it goes out to the absurd, because what are they going to do? Put him in a classroom and say, this is how you hit somebody with the intention of knocking them senseless. But by the way, don't make fun of somebody because they're wearing green shoes.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, the NFL has gotten to a very interesting place because it is a violent, violent, violent sport, and it has allowed a lot of violent, you know, and often criminal behavior to go under the radar because of, you know, the money that comes in, the revenue. But I think, you know, a lot of new things have been shed light on. You know, I think now they're doing all these, you know, concussion studies, and, you know, somebody killed themselves, and just a lot of bad things have come to light about the NFL, and I think it's sort of an awakening for them, and they have an opportunity now to do something good in this situation, which is address these issues that are, you know, that are not going to go away.
Right. Now let's take it one step further, because you actually worked in big law. You're probably the only person in the group who worked in big law.
Well, yeah.
Obviously, in an alpha male environment like big law, stuff like this must have gone on. Did you see any of this kind of bullying in a big law firm?
You know, I had a guy bully me once. It was kind of funny. I mean, he was always like not like bullying, like, you know, physical, but he crossed the line one time. It was funny. I had he dropped like 4 credit agreements on me at like 11 at night and said, I need these done by 8 a.m. And they were each like 150 pages. You know, it was like an impossible. He basically put me in an impossible situation. So I had to stay up all night and do it. And then I gave it to him in the morning. And without even reviewing them, he called me into his office and he threw them at me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he actually threw the agreements at me. And he goes, these are S-H-I-T. These are crap. You know, whatever. You suck. And I was like – so I tried to, you know, reason with him. I was like, listen, man, I don't know if this is about this or if this is about something else. You know, maybe if there's something I did to rub you the wrong way, we should talk about it, you know?
Right, right.
And then he goes, are you done? Get out of my office. So at that point, I was like, okay, I guess I'm just going to call HR and tell him this guy's a lunatic. I don't know what to do here.
Well, did you do that?
No, I didn't do that. But it's funny because he must have known that he had crossed the line, because he had also emailed the partner being like, oh, man, his work product is total crap, this and that. And the partner was like, what's going on here? This is weird. So after he, I guess, had a chance to review the documents and realized I didn't mess anything up, he sent like a really long apology email.
Wow. Wow.
On his own. Yeah. I think he realized like, uh-oh, I could probably get in trouble here.
Yeah. Now, be honest. Is it really true that there was something going on behind the scenes? Like, did you have condomless sex with his mother or sister?
Yeah, no, I didn't. But I think he didn't like my fun-loving attitude, my sensitive demeanor.
That's pretty, well, I can, knowing you as I do, I'm sure that you did something to at least subconsciously get under his skin.
I'm sure. There were probably many things I did to get under his skin. But, you know, the weird thing about this is that if you read all of the reports, a lot of them seem to indicate that Jonathan Martin and Incognito had a weird friendship going on throughout.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. And I think that's right. Like, it's almost like they were, what's it, like when you're put together, like in a marriage, right, you get along really well, but you also know how to push each other's buttons really well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I think you can't take these texts in isolation because you don't know how these guys are talking to each other, this and that. You know, he used the N-word, and then all the black players in the locker room weirdly defended him for doing it. I mean,
no, that's a fair point. I mean, right. In other words, a lot of Incognito's behavior was sort of tacitly approved of by a lot of the other players.
Yeah, yeah. And which is why I say liability-wise, you know, the coaches had to know what was going on here.
Yeah. Well, if they didn't, they should have anyway. But let's do this. Let's get some of our listeners to tweet us and tell us if they've had any bullying going on in their workplace. That'd be interesting to find out what goes on in law firms.
Yeah, I'd like to know if anybody has addressed it either. Because, I mean, I think there is a lot of bullying in big law, but I don't think anyone addresses it. You know, forcing you to stay up all night, forcing you to cancel vacations, getting yelled at, things that are probably things you didn't expect to happen to you as a grown man
right.
or woman.
Right. No, I think that's excellent. So for next week, everybody, if you want to have your tweet read on the air, tweet to us at Comedians at Law, and mention this and mention Matt and tell us you want to give us your big law bullying story. All right. Well, let's move to the second story we got this week. This one I know you're gonna like. This comes right out of almost like sounds like a Hollywood thing, Matt. This is Jay-Z is being sued for an improper sampling of a song. The company Tough America is suing him, Jay-Z, saying that he used a sample from the song Hook and Sling Part 1, a song by Eddie Bowe, and they say he used it without permission. And apparently this company is not alien to lawsuits. They do this quite frequently. They sued Kanye West back about a year ago, and they've sued some other people. Have you dealt with any kind of copyright work in your past incarnations?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say, since you're in your – what are you, in your 60s or 70s, are you familiar with this band? I don't know the Eddie Bowes.
That's right. I do. I used to hang out with these guys, with Eddie Bowe, and down when people used to stay warm by heating up or starting a fire in a garbage can and putting your hands over it.
Yeah, I picture you doing a cappella with these guys around a garbage
right.
can in the 1960s. But, you know, first of all, I listened to both songs. I don't know if you did that.
You did listen to the song?
I did listen to them side by side, and I was hard pressed to figure out where the sample was taken. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't taken. I mean, I'm not a music licensing expert, but it was very minor.
Well, but here's the thing: it's that look, sampling is obviously widespread in the R&B and hip hop industry, or music industry. Is it understood that it'll be done? I guess you have to give attribution, but look, the stories, what's his name, Robin Thicke, had this whole thing with the Marvin Gaye estate because he apparently used Gaye's song "Gotta Give It Up" for Blurred Lines. So I don't think it's uncommon that this gets done.
It's entirely the foundation of most of this modern pop hip hop.
That's right. That's right. So the question is,
there hasn't been an original thought in 30 years.
That's right. I mean, I remember when I was back in the 90s when you were still like a child, and then Puff Daddy had that song, that sort of homage to Biggie, sampling a song from The Police. And I thought, the guy ripped it off this song from The Police. What is he doing? And then it comes out that, we're just going to borrow anything we want to use, and because we don't know how to write music or play instruments or anything like that. But that's
I think in a weird way, everything is derivative of something else. You have two ways of going about it. You can pretend that you didn't steal. You can attribute and pay them and not sort of ask permission. Or you can ask permission and work in collaboration so that it's like – I think that's the best way, because then it's like, okay, you have their blessing.
Right. Well, that's the point. Is also, if you're Jay-Z and you're basically a billionaire, why wouldn't you just get their permission and pay them the $50,000? I mean, he probably could write a check for that or pull it out of his pocket change.
Yeah. See, I really don't like the idea of just taking others' works without permission and then just making this new thing, because part of it is that when you ask permission, you're basically acknowledging that you will now share the origins with your fans.
Yeah, no, I think that's right.
Jay-Z's fans should all know I got this from Eddie Bowe.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
You know, I mean, that's, I mean, I think more than money, you should acknowledge where you came from, where your songs came from, where your creative, you know, where your, the origins of this creativity came from.
Right. Well, look, all those, the comics out there who are stealing our stuff and using it all over the internet. I mean,
do you think there are a lot of comics using comedians at Love Bits? Let's go after them.
I do. I think they're using, particularly, I think they're using Kevin Israel's Sid, You're Asleep bit.
Oh, yeah. I think they are. I think we have to get, we have to go after them. We need a, we need somebody to listen to the different samples of bits. And, you know, that actually brings up a funny point. I've not yet seen a comedy album or, you know, a comedy bit that, I mean, you always hear about people stealing bits, but I have yet to see a lawsuit, you know, infringing on, you know, because in music, there's sort of a guideline for, a beat or a melody, or like the how many, you know, verses or whatever it is to become copyrightable.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, I wonder if it's just the setup.
Right, like a duck walks into a bar.
Yeah, it's like, wait, that was my setup. You know, yeah, I don't know. Like, is that infringement? Very good question. We're gonna have to get a copyright lawyer on. If there are any copyright lawyers on there, actually, I would like you to tweet us at CAL Pod and let us know, first of all, if you've ever seen a infringement case in the comedy realm. That's what I really would love to know about.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question because there, you're right. There have been a lot of stories like Dane Cook was reported to have stolen material from Louis C.K.
Right.
There have been some other reports of people stealing. What's his name? Mencia is always talked about as being someone who steals.
Carlos, yeah, Menstilo, they call him.
Yeah. well, in any event, so I think, look, the bottom line is the question here is at the end of the day, is Tough America a litigious company that just likes to sue people as a way of sort of extorting them? Or is it in fact the case that these people are taking advantage of this smaller company?
It seems like every, you know, it seems like they are, that's their whole motive as a company. But it does seem like they are going after, you know, bands that have sampled, you know, vastly sampled older music and not attributed.
Yeah, I think that's right. Well, we'll monitor this and we'll report back on it because I think it's not ended, this one. And that brings us to our third story, which I know you read with great interest because of your own.
Oh, it's real juicy.
Right. Well, especially because of your own GI issues. Apparently, a New Mexico man filed a federal lawsuit claiming that he was forced to submit the three enemas, a colonoscopy, two x-rays, and several cavity searches after he was pulled over for failing to yield for a stop sign while exiting a Walmart parking lot. So
yeah, you know, usually when all that stuff happens to me, I say, guys, can you at least buy me dinner?
Well, and also you probably would say, and where's my free Imodium?
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, this is my worst nightmare. This whole situation is mad because I have some bowel issues. This would be, I mean, this would really be bad for me.
Or bad for them, possibly.
This would be bad for the doctors, bad for everybody in the room. Honestly, they wouldn't even be able to find the drugs.
Well, look, you're the resident con law expert in comedians of law, at least since this morning.
Yeah.
What is your thought about whether or not this was constitutional?
Listen, it's crazy. Invasive procedures, I mean, you're basically talking about sexual assault here. I mean, x-rays is borderline, you know, but an enema and a colonoscopy, that's so far beyond the pale. I can't even imagine saying yes to any of this stuff, though.
Yeah, well, apparently he didn't really. I mean, in other words, they...
Right, but it doesn't say whether they held him down. It doesn't say, hey, we tied him to a bed and we lifted his, you know, his panties up.
You think this was like a case of like a porn movie where the person was saying no, no, but then they really meant yes, yes?
It's just odd. It's just there's something missing about this story where, like, first of all, you know, I learned a valuable lesson. It said that the reason they did all this stuff is because when he was pulled over and he was asked to step out of the car, his butt cheeks were clenched. So the key here is always have a relaxed ass cheeks. Always relax your ass cheeks.
Well, I think that's probably good policy throughout life, regardless.
No, not in prison. You should clench them all the time. Fully clenched, full clench.
Well, I think the underlying point is that, you know, when the police pull you over, you should not act in a suspicious manner. Right.
With your butt.
Right. Because, like, for example, I remember I got pulled over once after a gig, and I had gotten a back spasm, so I couldn't stand up. I almost couldn't move at all, and I was caught.
You're so old.
Yeah, and the police pulled me over for speeding, and the guy said, "Get out of the car," And I couldn't because I couldn't open the door. So I somehow I managed to force the door open. And then he said, get out of the car. And I couldn't move my legs side to side. So somehow I sort of fell out of the car. And
you just, I picture you just rolled out of the car.
Yeah, I did. I literally rolled out of the car. And he said, get up. And I couldn't stand up straight because my back hurt so badly. So they,
did you tell him that or did you say that?
I was so afraid they were going to shoot me. So the guy said, have you been drinking? I said, no. He said, come on, how much you drink? And he went through this whole thing. He gave me a breathalyzer, and I couldn't blow the thing because my neck hurt so bad from the back spasms. I couldn't make the bubble on the breathalyzer thing move.
In defense of the cop, you look more like a drug addict than this guy did.
No, I mean, I looked like definitely something was going on. And the problem was, I was in excruciating pain. And I couldn't get the guy to believe me that the reason I had been speeding is I was on my way to try to go to the hospital to like get like painkillers. And eventually they let me go, and they didn't even give me a ticket because they were like, oh, my God, dude, you're pathetic. But it was very scary for about 2 minutes, and I thought I was going to get shot by these cops.
Yeah. No, you want to act normal. But look, you know, from a constitutional perspective, this guy hopefully will, you know, set a precedent here that we can't do this. I would hope that a case law will come down shortly, if it doesn't already exist, saying that you cannot do any of these activities.
Well, let's play a game here.
Unreasonable. I mean, this is so beyond unreasonable search and seizure. They said there was a difference of opinion on whether he gave them permission to search his vehicle. So maybe what happened was they actually misheard him, and when they thought, you know, he thought he said you can search my vehicle, they actually heard you can search my rectum.
Right. Well, okay, but I want to play a game here. Let's play hypothetical like we're in law school. Okay, so let's assume that this case winds its way to the Supreme Court. And if you put on your Justice Scalia hat, what are you saying about this search?
I'm saying that it's an unconstitutional search and seizure. Why would you say otherwise?
I don't know, because Scalia every so often will come out with an opinion that's sort of a curveball. He'll say, well, you can't do this kind of search except in the case of a guy who's clenching his behind or something in a Walmart parking lot.
Yeah, even reasonable suspicion doesn't allow you to sexually assault somebody.
Well, I tell you what, as the final tweet of the week, what we want to do is get people to tweet us at Comedians at Law with their explanation with constitutional reasoning why this was unconstitutional.
Yeah, we want to get to the bottom of this, pun intended.
All right, we're going to move to the next segment here. And we got something really exciting, a new segment we're going to start. Our own Kevin Israel apparently is having all kinds of trouble becoming a 21st century citizen. So he's got a segment now coming up called Kevin versus the Internet.
Thanks, Matt and Alex, and welcome to Kevin versus the Internet. This is going to be a new segment where I, Kevin Israel, I'm going to talk about a story that really gets to me, and hopefully you, the listeners, will have some interesting thoughts and maybe tweet at us. The story today comes from Babbel.com out of China. This is a good one. A man is suing his wife for ugly children. Apparently, Jian Fang, living in northern China, filed for divorce from his wife after he found their newborn child to be incredibly ugly. Fang said his wife tricked him into marrying by appearing to be a beautiful woman when she was in fact ugly. This sounds like a horrible story, and I think we can all agree that Mr. Fang is a piece of crap. But here's the interesting twist in this. His beautiful wife, who in the pictures on the story at Babbel.com does look to be very beautiful, actually had $120,000 or $100,000 in plastic surgery, unbeknownst to Mr. Fang. She looked one way when she was born. She had a lot of facial reconstructive surgery to make herself appear beautiful and marry Mr. Fang. Mr. Fang won freedom from the bonds of marriage, as the author of the Babbel.com story said, and also got a $120,000 settlement. And I assume he will not be seeing his child anytime soon. Now this is an interesting question, because did Mr. Fang's wife defraud Mr. Fang and essentially con him into marrying her when he thought she was beautiful? And does it really matter, because she looked like she looked? But the question here is, well, does the child end up looking differently than what he would have expected? So do you have some kind of expectation when you get into a marriage, and can you be defrauded by your partner if she has a lot of, or she or he has a bunch of plastic surgery and doesn't reveal that to you. Now, that's pretty crappy, I think, of her not to tell him that she had all this plastic surgery. I mean, if you look one way as a kid or as a young adult and you get plastic surgery, I think that would be something you're going to tell the person you're going to be spending the rest of your life with. I don't know. That just seems to me to be an element of full disclosure before getting married. Also, didn't Mr. Fang see any pictures of his bride before all of this plastic surgery that might have led him to think this? Listen, plastic surgery is a big big industry now. A lot of people are getting it younger and younger. A lot of women are getting plastic surgery. I think it's more common and more prevalent among women than it is men. I don't know. I don't know who the bigger piece of crap here is. Mr. Fang for being a selfish, shallow, horrible father and husband. Or Ms. Fang, or the former Ms. Fang, for being a liar and misrepresenting her looks just to get a husband, really isn't beauty on the inside. No, it's not. But you probably should tell your person, your significant other, that you, by the way, had your face completely changed before you got married. And it's just ironic that it came out in their child and that he was able to identify it by his child. But you'd think that a man, regardless of appearance, would love their own child regardless. And so Mr. Fang, I think Mr. Fang wins out here in being the bigger piece of crap. But legally, he won according to the courts in China, they awarded him the divorce and $120,000 settlement, which is amazing. I am curious as to the grounds for that amount of that size of a settlement. I guess the old saying here is true: caveat emptor, buyer beware. So if you're marrying a woman or a man, ladies and gentlemen out there, check out their childhood photos, because that might make a difference. So let me know what you think about this. Tweet at us with the hashtag CalPod, or tweet at me at KevinIsrael_NJ, and let me know what you think. Would you have divorced her? Would you want to know? Do you care if your significant other had some plastic surgery before you guys met and got together? So that's it. That's it for me, Kevin Israel versus the internet. Going back to Alex and Matt. Thanks, guys.
Okay, well, Matt, we're gonna wish Kevin well. Hopefully, he can figure out how to use his computer.
Yeah, he'll figure it out. I mean, he's got to spend a little less time in the gym.
Yeah. The next segment we've got a great interview. We actually were able to get a hold of our own Ndidi Origi. She is going to be joining us, as we mentioned at the top of the podcast, and we're going to talk to her about why she became a lawyer, her career up till now, and why it is she left the law to become a comedian. And here we go with Ndidi. Okay, everybody, this is Alex Barnett, and I'm really privileged to be talking to Ndidi Origi, who is the newest member of Comedians at Law. Say hello to everyone, Ndidi.
Hi, everyone. Ndidi.
Yeah, that's good. Nice. You're already on the ball. Well, first of all, for everyone who's listening, why don't you pronounce your name correctly? Because I'm sure I haven't done it now, and nobody ever does.
So I'm always okay as long as everyone gets the N in there. But it's Ndidi Origi, if you really want to say it like the Nigerians would.
And the Nigerians would say it that way because you actually are Nigerian. Is that correct?
Yes, that is why. Yes.
All right. So you are a lawyer and a comedian, which is now why you're officially a member of Comedians at Law. Tell us, please, how it is that you became a lawyer.
Well, I actually, I remember it a little differently than my mom remembers it. I remember just sort of growing up always wanting to be a lawyer, wanting to go to law school, actually. And
did
my
you
mom
grow up in
said,
Nigeria or in the United States?
No, I grew up in Nigeria and in the United States. I was born in New Jersey. Because my parents were going to school here, and I went back to Nigeria when I was about 6 months old.
I see. Then, so you grew up in Nigeria?
I grew up in Nigeria until I was 10.
Okay.
And then I came back to America, and so I pretty much grew up in both places.
Okay. And where in Nigeria did you grow up? Did you grow up in Lagos?
No, I did not. I grew up in a very small college town called Nsukka, which is in the southeast of Nigeria. My family is Igbo, and it's in an Igbo area.
Okay, so a couple of questions. Number one, is there any chance that the University of Nsukka law school will book us for a gig?
You know, interestingly enough, Nigeria has it's a different system. So there's like one law school, and it's the law school, the Nigerian law school. And so we should actually.
That doesn't even sound real. Like the night I went to, I got my JD from the Nigerian law school.
Law school, but I'm saying that is one law school, and I have to actually find the name of it. But yeah, there's not, it's not a system like here where you have a variety of law schools attached to different universities. It's actually just one one school where the lawyers get trained, and they're called barristers. So it's a whole
so English
system.
Of you.
Yeah, and they wear wigs too, which is fun.
Do they wear like Afro wigs or just powdered white wigs?
That would be better, right? They wear a powdered white wig that they don't even wear in England anymore. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then you're a member of the Igbo tribe, you said.
Yes. Okay. So there's three major ethnic groups, and mine is the smallest of the large three, and then there's just a bunch of
Hello? We've lost Ndidi.
No, I'm here.
Okay. And then are you royalty within the Igbo people?
You know, I think every African person likes to say they're royalty because there's a bunch of small chiefdoms. So I like to think of myself as not royalty. But my grandfather was a chief. So, yeah.
Nice. Nice. Granddaughter of the chief. Well, that helps. We're going to put that on the Communities Law website.
Right.
We've got the chief's granddaughter working for us now. So tell us, you're back in New Jersey. I assume you went to high school in New Jersey.
Yeah, I actually went to high school in California. I pretty much touched on every state. I've lived in New Jersey, I've lived in Colorado, and I went to high school in California. And then I went to college in California as well.
Okay, and where'd you go to college?
I went to UC Santa Barbara.
Oh, go banana slugs.
That's actually Santa Cruz. We're the Gauchos.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Argentinian Cowboys.
Oh, nice. On the pampas. Yeah. All right. So, and then did you go straight away to law school or did you take some time off?
I went to law school after graduating from college, but I was in college for 5 years. And so that was sort of my extra time off, was that I was actually in college an extra year. I went to England to study abroad.
Uh-huh. Okay. And then you went to law school in America.
I did.
not at the University of Nigeria Law School.
No.
So where did you go to law school?
I went to law school at NYU.
Oh, fancy. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, very fancy. I was not at such a prestigious institution. I think I went to the U.S. equivalent of Nigeria Law School. But I won't name names because I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to get us in any hot water. In any event... So did you go to law school straight through or did you also take time off to go study abroad or all whatever this fancy stuff that you do?
I keep it fancy, Alex. I went to I didn't go anywhere else sort of to study, but I did work in China after my first year in law school.
Good God, woman. What is your issue? You just can't stand still.
Yeah, I can't stay in one place. I can't stay in one place.
So you finished at NYU, I assume.
Yeah. You did
actually graduate.
I did. Yeah, they gave me a diploma, so I believe that I finished.
Okay, and you took the bar and you passed it?
Yes, I took the bar in 2003 after I graduated.
Okay.
And I passed the bar, and then I started working. I went to work at a very big law firm.
Can you name names?
Yeah, why not? I worked at Paul Weiss.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, you might be the smartest person in Comedians in Law right now. So you worked at Paul Weiss, and did you stay there for a while, or did you leave and go somewhere else?
I was there for 2 years, 2.5 years, actually. And then I left, and I went to Loeb & Loeb.
Oh, okay. And what was the genesis or catalyst for that change?
Well, I was in the corporate department doing M&A at Paul Weiss, and I wanted to do entertainment. And so I got to go to Loeb and do entertainment, so I was out.
Okay. And how long did you remain at Loeb & Loeb?
I was there for 2 years. I get that mixed up. I might have been at Paul Weiss for 2 years and then Loeb & Loeb for 2.5 years or vice versa.
It doesn't really matter. I mean, basically, no one really cares, but we're just asking you to ask to be nice.
I appreciate the fact that you pretend, though. That's what matters.
So you did 2 years and 2.5 years at the two firms. And then what happened then?
And then I went to my current position where I work in-house at NBC.
Oh, now we're getting into something.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're in a position to really help us out. because because you know the comedians in law deserve and need to be on TV.
Yeah, if only I was on that part of it. I'm in the nice, boring advertising part. I got nothing to do with any of the folks who are getting on TV. I can't even get myself on TV.
Well, now you have a platform, the Comedians in Law. You can walk in and say, I've got 8 other lawyer comedians.
Exactly.
We're ready to do some advertising for NBC.
And they're going to be like, wow, we've been waiting for lawyer comedians. That's what, we don't have enough comedians. We just need lawyer comedians. So,
right.
Yeah, well, I know how that's going to go.
Okay.
I think it's going to go like that.
So tell us, along the way, where did comedy happen? When did you get the bug and when did you start performing?
So I think I kind of always had the bug because I was you know, one of those people. I was voted class clown, very prestigious award in high school.
Which of the high schools was this?
This is Arroyo Grande High School where I went to in California. And I
so was that a fancy way of them saying that you're the only black person in class?
Yes. Oh, I was totally one of the two.
That's I figured. So they said class clown is quote unquote.
They had to give me something. You know, they didn't want to give me class black person, so they gave me class clown. But yeah, so I was in some plays, things like that, but nothing really formal. And then I think it was when I started working at Paul Weiss back in 2003, 2004, and I always give the description that I felt like, you know, those people who work out a lot and their upper bodies are really buff and strong, and then their legs are all skinny and yes, you know, atrophied, and that's how I was feeling. My type A lawyer personality was just very well developed, and I was doing great with being anal, but my all my creative things were just blah, just completely atrophied and not growing at all. And
right. So, and I want everyone to notice how I resisted the temptation to make a joke about the word anal on this during this interview. So I can understand that, because look, I went through a similar thought process as I think all the members of Comedians Law did in feeling that, you know, the very rigid part of your brain, type A part of your brain, is being well developed as a lawyer, but the creative, passionate side is being underutilized. And so I think we can all appreciate it. And I think all our listeners can, because I think these are people who appreciate the transition we've made, and actually a lot of them are exploring a similar transition for themselves, whether it's in comedy or music or the arts or, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah. And, you know, you have to sort of be at the point in your life where you recognize that and you do something about it. And so I think after about a year at the firm, I started to feel like, okay, this is going to be a problem if I continue in this way, and I need to devote just as much time, or some time at least, what little time I had, to developing that creative side. And so I started doing improv, and I was doing, you know, long form improv at UCB. I was there for a couple of years, and then I started doing improv at Magnet Theater. I also did that for a couple of years. I was actually was performing with a troupe at Magnet for a while.
I gotcha. And of the two disciplines, stand up versus, let's say, improv, do you have a preference or a one that you enjoy more?
Oh, I love stand-up much more. I think before I did stand-up, I would have said improv because I imagined that stand-up would be just so much more scary and just not as it's not very collaborative. Most of the time, you're working by yourself. But once I actually started doing it, I think stand-up is way better.
Yeah. So, okay, looking out 5 years after the Comedians Law become incredibly famous.
Yes.
Beyond working with the troupe of a world famous lawyer comedians, do you have any individual goals within comedy for yourself?
I think for me, I've always thought about it as something that I can consistently build on. And I would love to have like a very good hour. You know, I think right now for those who are listening, who are comedians, you know what it is to have a really good 15 minutes. You know, you could probably perform for 30 minutes or 45 minutes, but you have a really, really good 15 minutes. So I have an hour of material, but I would love to have, you know, a full sort of very, very solid hour. And for me, it's just sort of a goal that I've set for myself and trying to continually write and add to that and get some, you know, very, very solid material that you could go up and do an hour if you needed to.
Yeah, and I have my hour. My HBO special is all ready to go.
Oh, that's
the only
great.
Problem is that HBO is not aware of my my readiness.
Or but, existence.
Well, no, I think they're aware of my existence because they bill me every month through Time Warner.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. But, we also have that relationship with HBO.
But they're not currently aware of my readiness. So if they're listening, I have an hour of material. It's HBO cable ready. Or if Showtime is listening, frankly.
It's all swear words. It's
or
all
Stars
swear-
or the movie channel. any of these channels that
Epics,
cares to
– anything.
NBC, if any of Ndidi's bosses are listening.
Yes, please.
Well, look, we actually unfortunately have to wrap up. You're going to be joining us on some upcoming shows. But if you have anything you want to plug individually right now, now's the time to do it. So here you go. Here's your 30 seconds to plug away.
Okay, so I have a monthly show in Brooklyn. It's called Not Without Laughter, and I don't have any information for you right now because our next show hasn't been booked yet.
Right, but I noticed you haven't Google booked it. Me for it yet, which is...
Oh, you are booked for it. What are you talking about?
Okay.
You've forgotten that you're booked for it, but you are.
I am?
But we were just trying to figure out the date, so...
Okay.
You are totally booked for
okay,
it.
Okay, good. That's the most important part of that show.
So, yeah, so you can Google that, and you can find out where the next Not Without Laughter comedy show is happening.
Okay. And what else you got going on?
What else do I have going on? Comedians at Law, Not Without Laughter. I'm working also on a comedy diaspora show, which hasn't quite happened yet, but I'm working on that with a bunch of other
about
bunch
Jewish
of other...
people. That's fascinating. I love that.
There are all sorts of different diasporas, Alex. I'm sure you could work your way into that one too.
I know, but just for people listening who may not be either Jewish or African or African American, the Jews invented that diaspora. We got kicked out of every place first. The black people.
We got kicked into everywhere first.
Yes.
We're like, hey, we don't want to be here. Oh, okay. Great.
Right.
Stay.
That's right.
I guess we'll stay.
Right. So, but you really were Johnny come latelys to the diaspora concept because we invented it thousands of years ago. You guys only did it hundreds of years ago.
Oh, okay. Okay. But I'll check
that's excellent. That's a very cool idea. Is it going to be a one-woman show, you think? Or
No. It's actually going to be a comedy show featuring lots of other immigrant people like myself and, you know, other people that kind of fit into the diaspora. So, yeah.
Okay, great. Well, that's exciting. So Not Without Laughter, again, tell us the address and the nights it is on stage.
It's usually the first Friday of every month in Brooklyn. And right now, I can't give you guys the dates because we're still working out the dates for November and December, but you can Google it and you'll find us. You can also follow me on Facebook and Twitter, Ndidi Origi, and you should be able to see the invitations.
Right. And also, everybody, Comedians at Law fans, you can find Ndidi now on our website. She's a member of the group and she'll be performing with us wherever we go and participating in our blog and our videos and et cetera and so forth. So we hope you'll all welcome her and embrace her with open arms as you have for some of us. And now we're gonna
I'm excited for those embraces.
That's right. And now we're gonna get back to our podcast. All right. And now, Matt, I know you've been sharpening the knives for this one. We're gonna move to the final segment of the podcast, which is your favorite, I know. The good cop, bad cop.
Sorry about that. I just I saw how aggressive you were being and I thought, wow, I gotta go even bigger than that since we're doing bad cop, bad cop.
What? No, I said good cop, bad cop. I'm the bad cop, you're the good cop.
Okay, then there it is. That's it. I thought you said bad cop, bad cop.
So, Matt, I'm looking at the Twitter feed. I'm looking to see who's following us. I'm looking to see who's tweeting at us with hashtag CalPod. And I am the good cop this week, but I can tell you that I do not, in all honesty, not trying to shade the truth here, I do not see that we got any tweets of that sort this week. So
listen, I'm getting as angry as a cop in Arizona who pulls somebody over with clenched butt cheeks. That's how angry I am right now. I might just order a colonoscopy and two enemas on our listeners.
Well, that's excessive, I think. I think that's unconstitutional. Also, I'm not sure how you'll do it over the airways, but here's the point.
I'll send them a free T-shirt in the mail, and it'll come with some sort of free candy. But it's inside it. There'll be enemas, you know, like in the movies where they always slip an enema in. You know, those are the best.
Right, right. It's like a takeover of the guy. You sleep with the enema.
Yes.
Well, all right. So here we have to do. I'm beseeching you. I know you're the bad cop, but I'm beseeching you. We need some guidance here. What is going to motivate our listeners to tweet at us?
I think we have to offer them something enticing.
Okay. All right. So I.
What if we like, offer to what if we offered a resume review service?
I like that. I like
job
that.
Seekers.
Who's going to review it? You.
I'll review
Bad
it.
Bad cop, red pen.
Yes. Yes, because I don't suffer fools well.
That's true. So, all right, so that's the point. So, everyone, if you tweet at us, hashtag CalPod, Matt Ritter, our own Matt Ritter, who was a big law attorney, will take out his red pen and go through your resume for free.
You're not going to like it, but I'll do it.
That's right. You won't like it at all. He might draw a picture of a smiley face or pornography on it. I don't know what he'll do, but he will review it from beginning to end. Right?
Yes.
That's your promise. You will review any resumes we get.
I will do it.
Okay.
I'm going to do it.
You heard it here, people. Matt Ritter is going to review your resume. So you have to, number one, tweet us at, but hashtag CalPod, CALPOD. Then we'll arrange to get your resume sent to us. And then Matt will review it and send it back with his remarks. I like
that. Yeah.
That warms my good cop heart because we're doing our community service here.
Yeah, why not? You know, I've always wanted to critique people's resumes. That's always been a dream of mine.
I like it. Good. Yeah, well, I think that's succinct and to the point. I mean, that's
should we go through this Twitter feed and these – I mean, we did get a lot of new followers. I will say this. And we've had a lot of interaction.
Yeah, well, that's the point. I mean, like, I think that's why I don't understand, because I'm the good cop and I love the fact that we're getting so much love from people. I don't know why they're going to the extra step of then tweeting at us. They're following us, but they're not tweeting at us.
Yeah, we had a good week. Should I go through the
list?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Ruth Carter, who's going to be in Arizona, who lives in Arizona, who we sent a free T-shirt to. We've had some interaction with. She said she's going to come, I think, to our show in Phoenix in January.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, by the way, you should do a quick plug for that show. Yeah.
Oh, well, we have a couple of shows in January. On the 29th and 30th of January, we're going to be in Tempe on Wednesday at the Tempe Improv. And then on Thursday, January 30th, we're going to be at Stand Up Live in Phoenix. And you can get tickets on our site. There's links to the tickets. But you know, mostly we want you to go to the November 23rd show because that's coming up. And we need to pack it up so we can record our first debut album.
That's right. That's right. So Ruth is going to be in Arizona. Renee and Chad Swanson have followed us recently. We've got some other people. Liz Glazer's been very active with us. John Brown. And
Lori Brand retweeted something.
Yeah, I mean, this is great. I mean, that's the kind of thing we need. But we need people to go that one extra step and just hit the hashtag CALPOD, and you get a free T-shirt, and it's really high quality. It was made with the cotton wheat woven together.
And we don't use child labor, actually.
Well, not a lot of it. Not
well, actually, your son helps out on the folding.
My son Ivan does help with the loom. And
loom.
Yeah, we have a loom, an Elmo loom at home, and he'll weave.
Well, because, you know, he has little fingers.
That's right. So, maybe we have a call into the booth.
No.
Okay.
That was just police calling to see if I would pull over my car so they could check my my rectum.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up. So, again, no T-shirt this week, but we like the fact that people are following us. Keep doing that. Join us on Facebook and come to our website, www.comediansatlaw.com. And most importantly, come see all of us performing at the White Plains Performing Arts Center November 23rd at 8 p.m. Tickets still available. Matt Ritter is going to be there all the way from L.A. So this is your chance.
I'm flying in for this one. We're bringing in the big guns.
That's right. So this is your chance. If you've not seen Matt before, if you're on the East Coast, this is your chance to see him perform live. It's a chance to participate in our live taping, which can be part of our CD and DVD. Anything else, Matt, you want to add before we sign off?
Yeah, I want to add that if you are going to hide drugs in your butt, what you should do is take a whole bunch of Imodium so that when they try to make you take an enema, they'll just counteract each other and it'll still be stuck there.
And that is